Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about Medicare, all you need to know in a scant 55 minutes. And to lead us in that discussion is David Santana, Office of External Affairs of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, a federal agency. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, this should be fun. And co-host of the show, Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, GovExec columnist, and one other thing. She was put in the spotlight, a well-deserved spotlight. Money Magazine, go out and buy it. What page are you on?
I don't even know. It's in the hundreds. It's towards the back. I'd like to know who nominated me. That was a cool recognition, so I
actually
really appreciate
I think I could get that.
Okay.
Yeah, because the lady told me, but it's got a picture of Tammy, and she was noted for her service to the federal community. But it isn't just the seminars Tammy does, and it just isn't the articles that she writes, but the torches she carries for people that maybe were categorized and
just when there's issues with retirement, sometimes people just don't know who to call or what to ask or how to get an answer to a question. So we try to help, as we all do here. Yeah. We're all in the same business, helping people.
All righty. And that was just really impressive. I'm an accountant besides a seminar, and my business partner came in and said, did you know Tammy was in Money? And actually, I didn't know it was out yet. And he goes, well, look at that. I go, well, she deserves it. Anyway, and my name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant finance type with NITP as well. All righty, David. what do we do first? When are you eligible for Medicare? And I guess maybe we'll step back and say, what is Medicare? For those that, again, we're going to take it from the basic level, and then we're going to build on that and probably go out there a little bit.
All right. Yes, that's the one very basic question, but very important question for everybody to know. What exactly is Medicare? Because especially these days that Medicare has been in the news during the presidential campaign and things like that. So people are asking more and more, what is Medicare? How is financed? Who is eligible for Medicare? So Medicare is a federal health insurance program, and it's actually offered to three group of people. When the Medicare program was signed into law in 1965, it was only for people who were 65 years of age and over. So the people in the Social Security system who were over 65 years of age. Now, in 1972, the Social Security Act was amended to include two additional group of people. Those who were disabled or have certain disabilities and receiving Social Security disability benefits for 24 months. Meaning that they were getting cash benefits from Social Security. So first you apply for disability benefits, and then if you get it, then you wait 24 months, and Medicare will become automatically after 24 months. And then the third group of people is those of any age who develop end-stage renal disease. This is stage 5 when people have renal failure. They need either dialysis or they need a kidney transplant to maintain life. So those are the three group of people that qualify for the federal health insurance Medicare program.
David, in 1983, I think, is when federal employees were covered by Medicare. And I think a lot of federal employees probably don't realize that we didn't always have that coverage, you know, because in 1965, as you said, when Medicare started, the federal health benefit program was still pretty new. It was only 5 years old. So federal employees were exempt until 83. You don't know any reason, like what the reasoning was behind covering federal employees by Medicare back then?
Well, what happened in 1983 was that up until then, federal employees did not pay federal taxes for Medicare. So at that point, the law changed and started charging Medicare taxes for federal employees. Those who were working for the federal government right in 1983 were kind of what we call deemed into Medicare. So they were deemed the quarters that they need to get specifically Medicare, the hospital insurance, Medicare Part A, at no additional cost. Now, anyone from 1983 forward that was either working or started to work for the federal government, at that point, they started to charge Medicare taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one of the things we want to talk about today as we go through this hour is when federal employees turn 65, whether they're still working or retired, you know, even though they still have their federal health insurance, you know, they want to know about Medicare as well. And Absolutely. So as we go through this, we'll cover the basics first, but that's probably a big topic we want to cover today.
And we'd love to take some calls at 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. It's about 10:12 a.m. Eastern Time. We're on till about 10:58 Eastern Time, and today is October 22nd. So please call us during that time. Do not call us after that time, but you can email us questions. We'll talk about that later. The reason you can't call us after that time, we won't be on the show because it'll be over. Anyway, so let's get into it. Thanks for the background. And I guess I have one question. Let's say somebody just started in 1983 or had been in service prior to 1983. But the moment the Medicare tax started to come out, they were grand personed in, if you will. Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Yep.
I'm not so sure a lot of people know
they
that.
They just don't know, you know, what it means. You know, so we have Medicare, yay, but what is it?
Okay, but exactly. Medicare is really, if I can be ultra simplistic, it's a house of four doors. Am I right with that? There's an A, there's a B, there's a C, there's a D. Is there more than a D?
Nope.
Okay, so... And behind door A is what? Medicare Part A.
Right. So, yes, Medicare has a different part. I was talking about 1965 and when the program was started back then, it was only the Medicare Part A and B. It was basically created to provide basic health insurance for individuals 65 years of age and over. And this is for hospital insurance and medical insurance. Medicare Part A is a hospital insurance. When people become entitled for Medicare enroll, they need a hospitalization. When they become inpatient in a hospital, that is a part of Medicare that will pay for everything inside the hospital, room and board, general nursing services, medications, anything that they need inside the hospital will be paid for by that Part A of Medicare.
What about the doctors that they see while in the hospital? Does that come under Part B or A?
The professional services you get in the hospital, for example, the doctor services mm-hmm. and surgeon services and things, that comes under Medicare Part B.
Okay, that's what I thought.
So the Medicare Part B is the part to pay for doctors and also pay for outpatient services, talking about prescription medication, lab tests, durable medical equipment, such as wheelchair, walkers, and things like that, that people in Medicare needs that comes from the Part B of Medicare.
Okay. I think anybody just listening to that is saying, how do I apply? Now, who need not apply?
They're saying, I already have that coverage because my federal health insurance covers inpatient and outpatient care. So I think a big question is, if I already have the coverage and I'm going to have it for the rest of my life, do I need Medicare? And then secondly, if I am paying for Blue Cross or one of the federal health plans, and now you're telling me that Medicare covers the same things, can I drop my federal plan and just have Medicare by itself? Will Medicare by itself be enough?
Well, that's believe it or not, there are many people asking this type of questions
right.
because we didn't get yet to how much Medicare cost. But people are asking, okay, if Medicare Part A, for example, the hospital insurance, is usually at no additional cost. In fact, 99% of people in Medicare will get Medicare Part A at no additional cost. So people started questioning, well, if I get that at no additional cost, why wouldn't I just drop my federal health insurance program and go into Medicare? Well, not so fast. Right. Medicare is not all-inclusive program. Medicare Part A do have a cost associated with it. For example, when you go into the hospital, you have to pay a deductible. This year is $1,156 that you have to fork out of pockets before Medicare start paying for your hospital stay. If you stay longer than 60 days, you have to pay like $248 a day.
A day.
A day from day 61 to day 90. Thereafter, you have to pay half of that deductible. And you have what we call a lifetime reserve date that people get only 60 days. Thereafter, once they use it, it's over.
So the point of that is that Medicare Part A doesn't have catastrophic coverage. So if you have a catastrophic inpatient experience, Medicare by itself is not going to be enough.
Exactly. Exactly. So there is a lot of out-of-pocket out there if you only have Medicare. And then after 150 days that I didn't get to the apart, Medicare stops. So if you stay in the hospital for 150 days, consecutive day in the hospital, Medicare will stop at that point, and then you end up in a hospital with no coverage.
Right.
Okay. Now, with this cost, it's a monthly cost, correct? The Medicare?
Not Part A.
Okay. But does the federal health insurance premium drop when somebody signs up for Medicare?
It does not. No, the federal health insurance premium will stay the same. And I think that's where a lot of employees get confused, because they think, if I'm retired and over 65, then Medicare becomes my primary coverage, and it's paying all except those expenses that David just outlined. So they wonder, you know, shouldn't there be some compensation? But I think the reason why there isn't is because the federal health plans charge the same price to everybody, whether you're working, retired, young family, older retiree, and the costs are spread equally amongst all of those enrollees. So the retirees are kind of getting a benefit of that, with the healthier employees being in the same program. So I think we experience that benefit throughout our career, and we continue to pay that same price after we retire.
Now, David and Tammy, when you do your public speaking, does that come as a surprise to your groups that you still carry the same premium and you pay the Medicare premium?
It comes as a disappointment, I think. I think they think the premium should go down when they turn 65, and then what I explained to them, I'm sure David says the same thing, is when Medicare becomes primary, your federal health plans get a big break because they don't have to pay those expenses that now Medicare is taking over. So what I suggest is you look at your federal health plan and see, what are you going to do for me when I do turn 65? You're not going to lower my premium, but maybe you'll waive some of my out-of-pocket expenses. And some of the plans will do that.
Okay. All righty. So if we've discussed that, I think that's crucial to a lot of people, mm-hmm. to understand the cash flow.
So for that, they should look in their federal health plan brochure. In this year's brochures, it's in Section 9, where it says coordinating your health insurance with other things like Medicare. So it'll tell you there if they waive a deductible, if they waive a co-insurance or co-payment. And what I've found is most of the fee-for-service plans, the traditional federal health plans, will do that. The HMOs typically don't. But then you have other benefits with an HMO. So you really have to evaluate it both ways.
Okay. I think there's a common misconception, at least with some of the people I talk to, that say, well, gee, I'm 65, but I'm still working. I don't really have to do that until after I retire to apply for Medicare. That's not the case, correct?
I think, when do you suggest people apply for Medicare?
Well, you're correct. There are times that we allow for people to sign up for Medicare. The first time that people turn 65, usually that's what we call the initial enrollment period. We gave in about 7 months to sign up for Medicare during their 65th birthday. So you have 3 months before your birthday, the month of your birthday, and then 3 months after. Now, we're talking about Medicare Part B. We haven't really discussed exactly what are the difference on the part. We did mention that Medicare Part A comes for free. Not for free per se, but you don't pay premium because you work and you pay credit mm-hmm. into the Social Security system. Now, the Medicare Part B, however, everyone that enrolls in Medicare have to pay that premium. So that there are certain times that we allow for individuals who signed up for that Medicare Part B. And if you don't sign up during that time, you will be faced with the penalty. And this is when people need to pay attention, because this is the part that will come with a penalty. Now, Part A, you don't have to pay premium, you already paid into the system, you can really sign up for Part A at any time, whether you do it at 65 or at 67, or whenever you decide to enroll in Medicare Part A, is your decision. You pay taxes into it. So you can enroll at any time. There is no penalty to it. So after you turn 65, any time. Now, Part B is that 7 month period. Now, if you don't enroll during that time and you don't meet certain exceptions, you will be penalized for enrolling late in Medicare Part B.
What would be the exception to the penalty?
The exception to the penalty is, for example, if you're actively working. You or your spouse, if you're covered under your spouse is actively working, whomever is carrying that policy, if that person is actively working, then you don't need to sign up for Medicare Part B when you turn 65. Well, if you don't sign up during that time, you can sign up at any time while you or your spouse are working. And then once you retired or your health insurance terminate, whatever comes first, then you have 8-month special enrollment period to sign up for Medicare Part B, and you don't have to worry about paying that penalty.
Now, B's got a premium cost, correct?
It does.
I mean, you pay something monthly. So somebody that would be 65 or over is working, probably wouldn't want to do this. Correct me if I'm wrong, because they have to pay a premium, and I don't know that they get anything for it. But correct me if I'm wrong with that statement. What would be wrong with that statement?
Nothing. Whenever someone's still working and covered by their employer's health insurance, typically that employee is still in pretty good health. They're probably just getting preventative care, maybe have a chronic condition or two, but their medical expenses are generally covered pretty well through their federal health plan. So if they can put off paying that extra premium for Part B, that certainly makes sense for them. And if they can enroll after they retire, like David said, during that 8-month window following their retirement with no penalty, then take advantage of that. You know, for some people, I've met a guy this week who is still working at age 74. So he saved himself 9 years of premiums by continuing to work well past age 65 for him and his wife, who's covered under his federal health plan. So if you can postpone that enrollment in Part B, certainly take advantage of that, because I'm not sure you would get a whole lot of advantage of it if you did enroll with your federal health insurance being primary. So would there be a reason, David, you think that you should take it if you're still working?
There is not really a significant advantage of having two programs, especially Medicare paying as a secondary, will pay very little out of pocket.
So that's an incentive to work after 65, huh?
Sure, Jamie? There you go. Now you got a good reason to keep working, Bob.
Thanks. All right. Now, the premium, as I understand it, it's income-based, isn't it? It's influenced by the size of one's income.
Yeah. The majority of people, I think, pay the general enrollment price, but then there's other prices.
There's other prices. The law changed in 2007, and Medicare Part B premium now is based pretty much on the person's income. For example, an individual who makes more than $85,000 a year, or a married couple who make more than $170,000, will pay more in Medicare Part B premium. So that is another thing that individuals, once they come to a decision, know while they're working, because we went down the road and said, well, while I am still working, I don't really need to worry about Medicare. Because I do have that special enrollment period to sign up for Medicare. But once I retired, then I do have that 8 months to think about Medicare. And I understand that once I retire, Medicare will be my primary health insurance. But I still have my FEHB, my federal health insurance program, which doesn't require me to sign up for Medicare. So is it advantageous for me, mm-hmm, after I retired to pick up Medicare and pay that Medicare Part B premium, which this year is $99.90?
Per person.
Per person. So is it advantageous? How much I'm going to get out of Medicare once I retired? Should I just keep my federal health insurance program going? Because of the premium is based on how much you make, you need to look to see where you fall within that income category and see if you even have to pay more than the average individual in Medicare to make a decision whether or not this is advantageous.
I think the hard thing for some people is that when they turn 65 or even when they first retire, they're still hopefully enjoying pretty good health. And I don't think you understand the full value of insurance if you're in good health, because nobody needs insurance if you never go to the doctor.
Exactly.
So my fear is that somebody would wait 10 years or 15 years and they'll say, oh, now I wish I had Medicare Part B, because now I do have serious health problems. I'm scheduling my social life around my doctor visit, so I need to, you know, to have some help with paying these out-of-pocket expenses. But then if you sign up for Medicare Part B and it's been 15 years since you could have enrolled, then what happens? like if you want to pick it up later.
Exactly. So I oftentimes tell federal employees, you know, decline a Medicare Part B either during the initial enrollment period if you're already retired, or after that 8 months special enrollment period. It's not really the end of the road for you. If you need it later on, you can enroll in Medicare Part B. We gave you 3 months, starting every year, we gave you 3 months from January 1st to March 31st to sign up for Medicare Part B. Now, if you sign up during that time, you have to kind of question that penalty. It is 10% for each 12 months that went by, and you could have had Part B, but you decide not to enroll. So you do have to pay that penalty. But keep in mind that I oftentimes tell individuals, if you waited to sign up for Medicare Part B for 5 years, keep in mind that you have been saving that Medicare Part B premium for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So this year is about $100. So if you save $100 a month for 5 years, that takes you like $6,000.
Yep.
That you save over $6,000 that you save over 5 years period. If you signed up during 5 year, it is a 50% penalty that you have to pay. Assuming that it's $200 within 5 years, then you will pay, and instead of $200, you will pay an additional $100 for your Medicare Part B. But keep in mind that you saved.
So I guess it all depends on how long you live.
Exactly.
If it makes sense to wait.
Now, is the penalty a one-time penalty, or is it a penalty in the sense that you pay a higher premium?
It is penalty that will last for life, for as long as you have Medicare Part B, so it will never go away. So it's a penalty that you will carry for life.
Okay, and I'm sorry, which one of you said this? It's per person, so on a joint return, if the income was rather high for a joint return, but if, and this is the least, because as I can look at this, there's five different premiums. Mm-hmm. Someone would have to make an awful lot, but that isn't totally out of the realm if somebody goes to a second career. But let me get back to my question. One of the two in a joint situation is 65 or over. The other one is not. Do they both sign up? They can't, can they? I mean, the one that's younger, how do they sign up for B if they're not 65?
No. As I mentioned in the beginning, there to qualify for Medicare, you have to be a member of one of these groups. So if you're not 65 yet, even if your spouse is over 65, you file a tax return, that doesn't really matter. You do have to wait until you turn 65 to be able to sign up for Medicare.
Okay.
Which means when you're picking your federal health plan, if you have one spouse over 65 with Medicare and the other one younger, I would say follow the least common denominator, help, you know, get the insurance coverage that that younger spouse still needs. Because sometimes when you're both over 65, or if you're single and you're over 65, you might be able to save some money switching federal health plans, because Medicare is going to cost you the same no matter what. But maybe pick a different federal health plan to correspond with Medicare. In fact, federal employees get an open season that corresponds with their 65th birthday that they can use once in their lifetime to change federal health insurance to complement the Medicare coverage.
Exactly.
Okay. And
which brings us to Part C.
Okay. Door C.
What is Medicare Part C? Because that's the one thing that a lot of federal employees don't really get, and they don't know if they need it. I know that OPM allows people to suspend their federal health insurance to use Medicare Part C. But is it a Medicare supplement? Is it something different from a Medicare supplement? I know it's called Medicare Advantage, and that's about all I know about it. So I'm real interested to hear this.
All right. Well, Medicare Part C, which we already know what's Part A, which is hospital insurance. Part B is the part to pay for doctors and Medicare. Now, Medicare Part C, which we call it Medicare Advantage Plan, this part of Medicare has been around for quite some time, since 1997, as a result of the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, created a Medicare Part C. And back then it was called Medicare Plus Choice. And that's what it is, actually. It is a choice that people in Medicare have. These are private health insurance plans that will take the place of Medicare if the individual is more comfortable having their health insurance managed by a private plan. Now, keep in mind that the same companies that offers the federal employee health benefits program are offering Medicare Advantage plans. So these are pretty much the same companies, the package of benefits will differ. They will be a little different. But it will function pretty much the same as the FEHB plans function. They do have monthly premium. They have copayment. They have coinsurance and things like that when the individual goes to the hospital. When they need a doctor care, they may pay. Depends of whether if they enroll in a fee-for-service Medicare Advantage plan or they enroll in an HMO plan. They may pay $15 copayment when they go to the hospital to the doctors, or they may pay $200 deductible when they go to the hospital.
How do you find these plans?
Medicare.gov.
Medicare.gov. That's easy.
Medicare.gov. You go to the website on the very front page of the Medicare.gov website. You will see a link in there say "Find and Compare Medicare Plans."
And they're talking about Part C plans when they say that.
They talk about Medicare Part C. We haven't gotten to the Part D.
But it
talks about these two plans. It's very user-friendly website, basically created as a result of many consumer testings out there with seniors to make sure that they feel comfortable navigating the websites. And they just put their information there, and it will pop up all the plans that are available within their area, how much the plan costs, and it allows them to compare whether it's more advantageous for them to stay in the regular course of Medicare or go to a Medicare Advantage plan, for example, and what type of benefits they offer.
It won't allow them to compare what they currently have with federal health insurance, though, will it?
It does not.
No. So
no.
You'd have to look at this as a separate choice.
Correct.
And if you choose that, it's not all or nothing, because you can do that for a year. If you don't like it, then you can cancel your suspension of your federal plan and then re-enroll in the FEHB and drop the Advantage plan, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And this is one of the things that one of those benefits that only apply to federal employees. So we encourage individual, if you're listening and you have neighbors or your family member who is on a private commercial plans out there, they're not allowed to do this. This is just for federal employees. If they wanted to try one of these Medicare Advantage plans, they are able to suspend their FEHB plan and then try one of these Medicare Advantage plans. If they don't like it, they can always come back to their FEHB plans.
Do you know how many federal employees use that option? Do you have any statistics on that?
I do not have statistics on this number. I did ask OPM, and I'm still waiting to see if they have any statistic that show how many people are doing this.
Actually opt out and try that. And is this different from Medicare Supplement? Because that's I get that question a lot. Medicare Advantage, and you hear about Medicare Supplemental plans. What's the difference?
You are correct, Tommy. There is a misconception in what Medicare Advantage plan is and what is a Medicare Supplement is. Medicare Supplement is called, what we call Medicare Supplement is Medigap policy. These are yet another type of private plans that are offered to people in Medicare, but those plans are just designed to cover the gaps in Medicare. Let's say that if an individual only had Medicare Part A and B, for example, those numbers that I mentioned, when you go to the hospital, you pay deductibles, coinsurance. If you go to a doctor, Medicare pays 80%, you pay 20%. So these Medigap policies are private plans that are sold to people in Medicare to cover those gaps in Medicare.
But federal employees normally wouldn't buy those?
Normally, federal employees wouldn't buy a Medigap policy. In fact, it's not recommended that you do. Mm-hmm. Because your Medigap policy will not work as well as if you don't have any other plan. So, in other words, federal employees, if Medicare is the primary, this is a very cheap and comprehensive Medigap policy.
Your federal health insurance serves that purpose, and
exactly.
Then some. It gives you that plus additional benefits.
Exactly.
Good.
Is that affectionately called a donut hole?
No.
No.
Okay. I'm hungry. And I just
you want to get to Medicare
donut
Part
hole.
D. We hear, talk about Part D. I think donut holes come up somewhere.
Okay. Sorry about that.
You're jumping the gun. But all do right. We want to do that? We want to talk about Medicare Part D, because that's the one thing you didn't mention.
C was actually very interesting for folks that would otherwise not know what you all just said, that it, with the federal plan, it doesn't make that much difference.
Right.
But occasionally we get listeners outside the federal sector. Occasionally. We shouldn't really cater to that comment now, but occasionally they listen. But all right. I mean, are we okay with C?
Yeah.
You feel like?
Yeah, I think that was a good explanation because that kind of distinguishes it from Medicare supplement and tells you that it can be used instead of FEHB if you want to try it.
Is there a cost to C?
There is a cost. It's pretty much similar to FEHB plans. So you do pay monthly premiums. Depends on which type of plan you choose and what package of benefits you have. For example, if you have a fee-for-service plan and a Medicare Advantage world that give you the opportunity to go outside of the network, have that freedom, you would pay a little more. If you have an HMO plan, you'll pay a little less.
So it's almost like giving more choices because you now have, like, you might have 15 FEHB plans to choose from, and now you have maybe 15 Medicare Advantage plans to choose from. So in some ways, it might complicate your choice.
Right. In every county, we have at least more than 20 Medicare Advantage plans to choose from.
In every county?
Yes, in the nation.
Around the country?
Around the country.
Even Alaska and Hawaii?
They're everywhere. Well, there are certain places, for example, rural areas and things like that, that you wouldn't have that
many
plans. And there are some areas that may not have a plan, but that is very small, for example, in Alaska.
And I guess we should mention, too, because a lot of our federal retirees plan to relocate after they retire, and some might relocate out of the country. So Medicare is really only for within the U.S., correct?
That's a really good point, Tommy. Yes, Medicare is only for service that you receive here in the U.S. or its territories.
Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands.
Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, Alaska.
As well as all those states.
Right.
Okay. And D.C.
Okay,
and
so
D.C., right.
So for us slow here, we're going to have probably a federal plan, and we may or may not have an additional cost from Medicare B, based on our income, if we want it. And C,
we'll have the basic cost, but you may not have to pay the means-tested price, depending on your income.
And that's just the accountant in me says, watch out when you take money out of IRAs, et cetera, because I work with a fair number of people, and they go, why did my Medicare go up?
Oh,
because you took the money out.
Took more money out of your investments, and you pushed your income above the limit.
Be careful when you're doing it, or if you're going to do it every other year.
Well, that brings up another point, because there are some times in a retiree's life where you do come into some money, like your spouse might die and leave you some insurance, or you might have a windfall from your lump sum leave check. So if you're just having a once occasional windfall of money that year is going to push you into a higher tax bracket, would that just increase your premium for that year, or could you get a waiver for that year? How does that work if you're not going to consistently have that higher income?
Yes, the income-related monthly adjusted amount, that's what that Social Security called this new, way of charging Medicare premiums. The way the law is set up, they look at the last 2 years of your taxes that you filed. Now, if one of this year you make one of these withdrawal, they will look at that and they'll set up the Medicare Part B premium for the following year based on that amount. Now, if that change, the next year, you don't have that lump sum in there anymore, then your Medicare Part B premium will be readjusted again to what it was before you get that lump sum. But you do pay that for 1 year.
And then it would go back down automatically.
Exactly.
Or could you contact Social Security to let them know, or is that not necessary?
You would contact Social Security and let them know. They will not contact you and let you know.
Okay.
So it is your duty to
call
make
me,
sure
I won't call you.
To protect your investments.
Right.
Exactly.
Now, so I some of the folks I work with, we take out of the IRAs, if you will. These are not 70-and-a-half-year-old folks. Every other year. So we cut down on the premium cost. Yeah,
exactly.
And I had one last week that called and didn't know about this, and then I got an increase in my Medicare, and who should I court should I fight this in? And I emailed back and said the court of nowhere.
It's just the way it is. That's the law.
Exactly.
Yep.
All righty.
No, we want to get to Part D, right?
Okay. Let's do D.
Well, we are in the last part.
Yeah.
Because
then we got
fast.
Some questions. I want to finish so we can get to some more questions.
Well, Medicare Part D was actually brought into the Medicare program in 2003 under President Bush. That was the Medicare Prescription Drug Improvement and Modernization Act of 2003, which created prescription medication for people or coverage for prescription medications for people in Medicare. Believe it or not, until then, although the program was created in 1965, Medicare didn't really pay for prescription medications. So people went to their doctors when they were sick or got out of the hospital with a plan of treatment, and the plan of treatment usually include prescription medications so you can get better, but we were not paying for this. Mm-hmm. So the Part D plan offered that option to people in Medicare. This is also offered through private health insurance plan that will pay for prescription medication. So it's very similar to the Medicare Part C, but it's just to cover for prescription medications. So the typical individual in Medicare that has Medicare Part A and B, and they would like to have prescription drug coverage, they will purchase one of these private plans that will pay for their medications when they go to the pharmacist. Now, the advantage of individual in Medicare in terms of having everything under one card is that option, the Medicare Part C, the Medicare Advantage. If they enroll in Medicare Part C, usually Part C comes with prescription drug too. So you will have one card that will pay hospital, medical, and then prescription drugs. Once you're enrolled in Medicare Part C, the Medicare Advantage, also keep in mind that you need to keep paying your Medicare Part B premium. So you do have Part B premium on top of the Medicare Part C premium. There are some plans, however, that offer no additional cost, and that's why individuals need to go to to Medicare.gov website and compare to see which plan they're offering, how much those plans cover.
And I should mention, with most FEHB plans, your prescription drug coverage could be just as good as a Medicare Part D plan, if not better. So not most federal retirees don't necessarily need Part D. But what I tell people, and let me know if I'm wrong here, but if you find yourself at some point in life, whether it's in your 70s, 80s, 90s, that your prescription drug out-of-pocket expenses, even with your FEHB coverage, is getting to be $100 a month or $200 a month out-of-pocket, then it can add to that. You can add a Medicare Part D plan with no penalty for late enrollment because your federal health plans are, what's it called, credible coverage. So you don't have to pay that penalty. So that's something you could add later without fear of the penalty if you're in an FEHB plan.
You are absolutely right, Tommy. And this is a good point because in the law, there's a clause in the law that advise or mandate the plans that are offering prescription drug to individuals in Medicare to send them a note every year, letting them know whether the plan they have is as good as the Medicare Part D plan. And FEHB, if you look at any brochure of any plan, the second page will have this disclosure indicating that the FEHB plan's prescription drug is as good as the Medicare prescription drug plan. And therefore, they don't really need to sign up for Medicare Part D. So as we go down the Part A, B, C, when we get to Part D, it's kind of like, well, it seems like I don't, as a federal employee, for as long as I have that plan, I don't need to worry about this Part D plan. So I would put it on the side because enrolling, although you can enroll in a Medicare Part D plan, it's not going to add any additional value to your policy. It'll add an additional cost to your pocket, but not an additional value to your policy. So that's not the route you want to go. But as Tammy mentioned, later on in life, if something happened, then you have the opportunity to enroll without having to worry about paying a penalty.
Is Part D premium needs-based, if you will, get rid of needs-based. So is it based on the size of one's income? Is it just flat? It doesn't make any difference what your income is, the premium, if you enroll.
The Part D premium?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, actually, if individuals who are below 100, and I'm glad you asked that, Bob, because the individuals who are below 100% of the federal poverty level, their premium is reduced or eliminated. So Medicare Part D may come at no additional cost. They only pay little co-payments when they go to the pharmacy, maybe $2.50, $3.50, depends on what they fall within that 150% of the federal poverty level. So they may be an advantage for an individual if they are federal employees and have FEHB. If they fall below 150% of the federal poverty level, they may want to look at Medicare Part D because it'll come at no additional cost, and it may cost less than having the FEHB pharmacy benefits by itself.
What if they're not? The 150% of the poverty level. Is the premium high?
The premium will depend. Exactly.
On which plan?
The premium will depend. Same thing. The premium will depend on which plan you choose, how
and
much
I think
coverage they offer.
With the selection tool that's available, you have an opportunity to put in the prescriptions that you typically fill, and it'll help you choose a plan that's going to meet those needs the best, I think, is what I've heard.
Exactly, exactly. So you do go to the website, you type on your zip code, and it'll tell you exactly which plans are offered. You can choose like the best three plans, because it'll start by telling you from top to bottom, these first three plans right here, the one that will give you the best option for what your benefits, and this is how much they cost, and you can compare them and then choose.
Right.
And I have to ask you a question. You were kind enough to send us your PowerPoint presentation, and somebody that's not familiar with this stuff, namely me, I got a lot out of reading that. And is that available to the public? Probably a really bad question to ask in front of the public, but it was easy to read. It was a number of pages, but it wasn't like reading a book.
Exactly. It is available. Anything that we have in the government, pretty much everything we have, not everything, but this is one of the things that is available to the public. The individuals that want to pull up this type of PowerPoint presentation, not only this one that you're looking at, but presentations covering from A to C in Medicare, we have probably like 13 PowerPoint presentations that will walk you through the entire Medicare program. And if somebody wanted to look at this presentation, they can go to www.cms.hhs.gov National Medicare Training Program.
One more time, please.
www.cms.hhs.gov/National Medicare Training Program. One word.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good to know, because then people can kind of flip through that and get a little better understanding just of the basics. And also a very good publication, I think I just saw it's been updated already for 2013, is the publication that's called Medicare and You, I think is the name of it.
The Medicare and You publication is on the website. There are many publications on the website, and they can access those publications through Medicare.gov.
Right.
On the front page, they will see in there resources that individuals could have, and they could look for publications. They can download the publication or even order the publication online.
With the Affordable Health Care Act, and I know we're getting towards the end of 2012, so is there anything people need to be aware of that might be changing with Medicare next year, or the premiums, are they going to go up drastically? Do we know what they are yet? Is there any news on that front?
Well, we know that the cost of living was announced last week, 1.7% in the cost of living on the Social Security. And we know that Medicare Part B have to be kind of aligned with the cost of living. Individuals who are who the cost of living increases not more than the dollar amount of Medicare Part B increase, they will be what we call harmless, or they will be protected for not paying more on Medicare Part B premium than what they receive in the cost of living. But the majority
of you're saying if the premium went up $20 and their cost of living only increased their annuity by $10, then they wouldn't have to pay the increase.
They wouldn't have to pay the increase. Their premium will not change.
Okay. We had that for a few years back just then, a few years ago.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
You mentioned, I'd actually read this as well. Some of this came under the Balanced Budget Act of 1997. They had some really neat tax things in that, too. Well, what about the Unbalanced Budget Act of 2012? Do you see anything on the, this is really, I shouldn't ask you this because then somebody's going to say, well, he said this, but with regards to the need to raise revenues and the like, I don't know if this is target range or not. I don't know. And I'm not going to ask you for a response to that. That's just a comment to the folks listening. Anyway, sorry. Let's get back to this. I'm a money.
That's
person,
not like so. You to ask projections. Yeah, you don't usually do that.
No, I don't.
You just got excited today.
Well, I'm learning.
But the one thing I know people are concerned about, I think maybe even a little fearful about, whenever someone is approaching 65, whether they're still working or whether they're retired, you know, they talk to other people who are over 65 and they hear horror stories about doctors who refuse to take a Medicare patient and that you just can't find physicians. You know, you're kind of looked at as the plague, you know, if you now have Medicare. Is that really true? Is there any truth to that rumor? Do doctors in this country accept Medicare patients? Do they mind seeing Medicare patients? What's the story on that?
What we've seen in here, and, you know, we are a career federal employee, so we're not allowed to, you know, to kind of tag on any storyline that will be catchy out there. But what we can tell you in terms of the facts on the ground are that the majority of doctors out there do participate in Medicare. Very, very small amount of people in Medicare report that they will have any problems getting a new doctor. If you wanted to look some hard statistics and numbers, you're looking at Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, which is a nonpartisan body that advises Congress on Medicare policies and payments. And since 2000, they have been tracking the Medicare population, whether the access to doctors of care is adequate compared to those who are not in Medicare. Mm-hmm. So they're tracking very large amount of numbers of individuals from age 50 to 64, and then from 65 up when they enroll in Medicare. And they conduct studies between these two groups and asking them, do you have problems getting a new doctor in Medicare? The majority of people will report, I never had any problem, very little if any, to have access to care and Medicare, to have access to doctors. When they ask the same question to individuals who are enrolled in private plans, usually the likely number is higher than Medicare. So individuals that are kind of arguing, does people in Medicare having problems with doctors? The hard statistics that this nonpartisan body find is like people in Medicare don't really have that much, if any, any problems accessing new doctors in Medicare.
Do you ever see any parallels between a malady somebody might have with age and the doctors then that service that? As we age, arthritis might be more of an issue 65 and older than it would be below that.
I think that's a good point, because I think Medicare caters to the needs of people who are older. So when you need things like arthritis medications, or if you need durable medical equipment, or if you need skilled nursing care, that's one of the areas where I would say look in your federal health plan brochure to see the limitations on that coverage, and then look in the Medicare and You booklet to see that they cover some of those things more generously. So I think when you are over age 65 and well over age 65, you may need some of those services that you'll find Medicare actually might be better coverage in some instances. Is that true?
That is very true. You may find that there is some service covered under Medicare that not actually perhaps the FEHB don't pay for, such as skilled nursing facility and physical therapists and things like that Medicare would pay for, and that otherwise will not pay for by the FEHB plan. So definitely worth to look at it.
And I know, Tammy, you wanted to get to some things. We have 4 minutes or so. And so I didn't want to say we got 2 minutes. And so in our 4 minutes.
Well, as we've been talking, I've been trying to bring up some of the things that I have on my list of questions, that some of these came from other students that have taken classes, or they just knew we were going to have this topic on today. But, you know, a lot of people just want to know, what's that procedure? So when you go to apply for Medicare, who do you call? How do you do that? Like, do you get the information in the mail automatically, or do you have to contact someone that you want Medicare?
Very good point, Tommy, and I think we should have covered that in the beginning. I am from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is a federal agency that administers the Medicare program. When the Medicare program was founded in 1965, we were under Social Security Administration up until 1977. That was when our agency was created. So the just wanted to give that background, because Social Security is the best agency position to be able to enroll people in Medicare. They are the one that collect workers' information in terms of who's working, who's paying into the credits. So to enroll in Medicare, any question about Medicare enrollment, you will call Social Security Administration or go to your local Social Security office in your area to sign up for Medicare.
I think you can even do it online now at ssa.gov or socialsecurity.gov.
Exactly. Socialsecurity.gov.
Those who want to do it that way, it's correct. I've heard a pretty painless process. It takes just a few minutes.
Exactly.
Okay, keep rolling. I think we have about 2 minutes left.
Oh, okay. Well, that I've covered a lot of the questions. I think another concern, I'm not sure if you can address this or not, but a lot of federal employees, you know, have the traditional health plans like Blue Cross fee-for-service plans. But also a lot of federal employees have an HMO, like they might have Kaiser, they might have Aetna, and those plans cover a lot more of your out-of-pocket expense. So do you think it's taking a risk if someone just takes Medicare Part A and then just uses their federal health plan as they've always used it, or do you think there's an advantage they should still look at Part B?
I always tell individuals, you know, naturally, as we age, we would need more medical service. In fact, the majority of health expenditures happen in the last year of life, that you would have a lot of out-of-pocket expenses during that last kind of a stretch in there. So perhaps it may be beneficial for you based on your family history. You have to look at to see if it's likely that you will need a lot of medical care as we move on. So, again, it's evaluating the situation, your personal situation, looking at what Medicare offer may be a good thing to do.
Okay. Tammy?
I was just going to say there's a lot of resources on this topic. So besides what you've heard today, OPM has resources on their website at opm.gov. And there's also something called the State Health Insurance Program, SHIP, that you've mentioned, David, that also can help employees and people in general.
All righty. Now, for those of you all listening, pass the show along. No commercials, great information. And we really got into not the weeds, but the good general. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week, and same time, same station. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.